We are back after a beautiful holiday weekend of football, Thanksgiving football, Black Friday football, rivalry weekend in college, full slate Sunday, and then the classic Jameis experience on Monday night. How was your weekend, Judah?
A true privilege. I mean, both in the actual sense of the word, with all the football as we discussed, and then, I mean, Jameis is an adventure, and I had a lot of really tough losses. I needed the Bears to come through to hit on some same game parlays. We all know how that one ended up. The Panthers as well would have been a nice one. And then I'm sitting there with a Bo Nix 275, Jerome Ford 40, Denver minus 4.5, 50-1. And I'm, you know, with 12 minutes left in the fourth quarter, right before Bo Nix throws an interception, I'm like, all right, I'm in a pretty good spot. He throws it, I think it's done. And then the shoestring tackle on the screen, and I'm like, oh man, another loss. And then in comes Jameis to save the day, throwing a pick six, a true adventure, a hero, if you will, helps us cash the 50-1 there. But I have to say, watching Jameis Winston not only play football, his interviews, everything about him is just it is really special. Truly blessed to have a player like him in the league.
Yeah, no, that Monday night game was ripe for some SGPs. A lot of offense in that game. And you talked about the Bears. That was one of the more frustrating experiences watching a game I've had. If I wasn't around my in-laws, I probably would have lost it. I had to hold my composure. But I was sitting on Caleb 250+, Keenan 80+. That hits. Then the hands to the face brings it back. I was sitting on Caleb 40+ rushing. He was at 39. He had that run on the last drive where I thought he might get it, didn't get it. And I'm like, all right, at least we get overtime. He's probably hitting overtime. And then he takes the sack, and I'm just watching the clock roll down, and I'm thinking, how is this possible?
I'm an extremely stoic watcher. Football, it's like I was yelling at my TV, like, snap the ball, snap the ball, snap the ball, which is a real rarity, but a moment like that itself is as rare as it comes, and obviously quite frustrating for Bears fans and those who rooted for their bets.
Still a great weekend of football, and hopefully we follow it up here with another one starting tonight, Thursday Night Football. Honestly, probably the game of the week off of the main slate. You got Green Bay going to Detroit. The Lions are 3.5-point favorites, 51.5-point total. We just saw this game a couple weeks ago. It was in the rain, bad conditions in Green Bay, and the Lions got the win. Bad pick six from Jordan Love. Kind of sloppy game overall. I expect we'll probably see some more offense here indoors in Detroit. How are you looking at this one?
Yeah, I mean, I think injuries are the name of the game here. The Lions have lost like basically their whole defense since then. I mean, 800% went down before then, but they've got like Ali McNeil on the defensive line and no one else. I mean, Anzalone went down a couple weeks ago. He was one of the best coverage linebackers. I think Carlton Davis is going to be back. So their secondary should at least be intact. But I mean, they're calling guys not even off their own practice squad, but off other people's practice squads. And I think that's particularly interesting for this spot because I don't know if they're going to be able to stop the run as well as they have all season, right? It's one thing to do that. Yes, a lot of this is schematic. It's one thing to do that, you know, with your personnel. Like, I don't know. They don't have DJ Reader's been one of the best run stuffers in the NFL for years. They don't have him, and the Packers love to run the ball. I've been like waiting to kind of attack the Detroit secondary because I think it's particularly vulnerable, and usually they set up as this pass funnel. But I don't think that this is even the spot to do it. Certainly not with volume, maybe some efficiency, but I think the Packers can run the ball on Detroit, especially given the state of this defensive line. It's really, really difficult to project because these are not guys we've seen, but usually practice squad players playing is not a recipe for success. And on the other side of the ball, I think Green Bay's defense is extremely overrated, right? We're talking about that on Miami last week. That itself was a little bit of a weird game. And I think the Lions are like primed to score also. I mean, Taylor Decker's out, which is a tough loss, but they can run the ball on anyone. We've talked about that kind of ad nauseum. And I don't think this is a particularly great Green Bay secondary. Jair Alexander is still out. I think we can see a lot of points. I think 51's probably a little bit low, but there are definitely a lot of creative SGPs, especially with some inverse correlations you could use given how potent these two rushing attacks are.
Yeah, and we've talked about how good the Lions' run defense has been this year, but you look back at that first matchup. Josh Jacobs didn't have a ton of volume, but he had 13 carries for 95 yards. Green Bay's been running it just about as well as any offense in the league, and like you said, they're probably the most run-heavy team when you look at neutral situations this year. They want to run the ball. I think the angle that I'm going to be looking at in their passing game is Christian Watson and something built around that. Romeo Doubs is out again this week, and Watson has been targeted a team high 18 times against man coverage, and those are coming about 20 yards downfield. So you have opportunities for multiple of these deep shots to him in this game against a man-heavy defense. And you look at the first game, not a lot of production, but he had 6 targets against man coverage, and 3 of those were deep shots that didn't connect. So 1 or 2 of those connect, you're looking at a potential for a really big Christian Watson game at what should be reasonable lines. I haven't actually looked at what they are yet. I probably should.
I also think Dontavian Wicks is intriguing for many of the same reasons, right? We like kind of have this, especially when the distribution of targets gets narrower when like someone's hurt on Green Bay. But like Jaden Reed's the guy to go to in zone, and then Watson and Wicks, I think, to a lesser extent in man. But he's also a guy who, like Watson, can break a big play. He just needs to work on catching the football. Apparently important for wide receivers.
Just a little bit.
But his alts are also something I'll definitely be including for many of the same reasons as you are, Christian Watson.
For reference, I just looked up the lines. Watson 49.5 on FanDuel. Wicks 36.5 on FanDuel is what they're sitting at right now. And then on the Detroit side, yeah, I'm going to mostly be on the ground game here. I might go back to the well with Laporta. I was on Laporta last week. He ended up with 2 touchdowns, but like 8 receiving yards or something. He had like 3 catches for 8 yards and 2 touchdowns or something like that. But the run game has been awesome, and I talked about it the last time we previewed this game. The Lions running outside zone, which is one of their top run concepts, they do it at one of the highest rates in the league against 4-man fronts, has been absolutely lights out. It's about 2 times as efficient as the next closest team. Green Bay has switched to more of a 4-man front this year. They're 4 defensive linemen on the field, 98% of their snaps. So I think schematically that sets up well for Detroit, even without Taylor Decker. Now, obviously, Jahmyr Gibbs has a bigger chance of breaking one of those runs for a big play. How are you looking at this whole whiteboard gate with Jahmyr Gibbs?
I don't know if it's going to affect his usage. I'd be kind of surprised. Although, because I'm a sicko, Dan Campbell changed his tune a little bit. I mean, initially he seemed like all pissy about it,
yeah,
and like, oh, I didn't know that. And then he's like, you know what? We could give the entire league our whole playbook. It's not going to make a difference. I don't think it's going to affect his usage, and he's far too talented right now to take him off the field. And I don't think there are any indications that they're going to sit him.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I might like Montgomery a little bit more, just whether or not it's warranted, especially near the goal line, because like they love using him near the goal line, and maybe Campbell's going to defend his guy in the public, but it's like, all right, we're going to give Montgomery some more touchdown opportunities in this game or something along those lines is my best guess. Yeah,
that actually would fit, although like also even without that, Montgomery got all the work in the second half of that Bears game, so perhaps there's some signal there.
All right, we won't spend a ton of time on that game because we talked through the first matchup. Next game we wanted to hit on was Jacksonville. We have been bullying Jacksonville. It's been working. And this is a spot against Tennessee. In Tennessee, Titans are 3.5-point favorites. Trevor Lawrence is out. Sounds like he's out for the year with the concussion / surgery to repair his shoulder issue. 39.5-point total in this game. What do you like here?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Levis and a lot of his alt passing props. Definitely not betting on kind of the medians there, but Jacksonville, take a step back. Will Levis has a disastrous ability to avoid sacks. He leads the NFL in sack rate. His pressure to sack rate is exceptionally high. Jacksonville can't generate any pressure. That's kind of to start with. And that's a particularly bad recipe considering how bad their secondary's been, and especially how vulnerable they are to explosive plays, allowing kind of the highest explosive play rate in the NFL. Their defensive EPA is like point, their pass EPA by our counts is like 0.27. The next worst team is like 0.13. And if you kind of, especially if you shade that towards more recent play, that's even more true. That's a huge, huge gap. Like, they're way worse than the next best pass defense. And they've been playing plenty of man coverage, so a little bit less so than early in the season. And that's where we've seen the deep shots, especially to Calvin Ridley. Westbrook Akine has kind of caught a bunch of these long touchdowns. Those have actually mostly been in kind of 2-high coverages. But more often of just like Levis hitting on these deep plays and like in man coverage in particular, you're going to have kind of a wider distribution of like many more things can go right or wrong for a team. But I think it just points to Levis, especially with like when he has time to throw, he's been one of the more accurate passers we've charted. He just like, he takes a absurd number of sacks. I think his sack rate's like 11%. You're not going to be able to sustain offense when your sack rate's that high. But if the other team can't generate pressure, you're probably not going to take sacks, and you're going to be in a in an environment conducive to success, given the Jaguars matchup. 205, I think, is just, it's a little low. You can also get very creative with his attempts, because I'm not sure he's going to be throwing that often. But like, he could hit on a couple of, it wouldn't be shocking to me if he hits on 3 or 4 30-yard passes, just given how the Jacksonville defense is structured and how Levis likes to attack. And Jacksonville is also, maybe this goes against the attempts part, they've been pretty good against the run kind of all season, and they force teams to throw against them. I just think 205 is a little low if Levis is going to be primed to take advantage of that matchup. And the nature of how he's going to get there, I think, is not like 10 to 12-yard passes with relative low variance. It's going to be a lot of these deep shots. So I'm not interested in taking the 205 that's out there now. I'm much more interested in building something like a Levis 275 with the Titans win, depending on how that is correlated, or even just like a kind of naked 275 alt line itself. Jacksonville's defense is really, really bad right now.
Yeah, I'm on the same thing for many of the same reasons. And the other part of it is Levis has been playing his best football of the season the last couple weeks. He's still made a couple of those really bad decisions and turnovers. But if you look at his PFF passing grade, his 4 highest grades of the season have all come in the last 4 weeks. And I don't think Jacksonville is going to be able to get much going on offense with Mac Jones. Like, even if you include their comeback last week against Houston into Mac Jones' overall numbers for the season, still has a 25% scoring drive rate with him at quarterback. That would be lowest in the NFL. They've really not been able to get a ton going. Tennessee's defense, I think, might be the reputation for Tennessee's defense might be a little bit better, I think, than they actually are. Like, they haven't been a top 10 defense this year, but they sometimes get talked about it that way. But I think it doesn't matter in this matchup. Jacksonville's offense is too bad with Mac Jones at quarterback. They're not built to elevate a backup quarterback level of play. And I kind of like pairing Levis with either Titans -3.5 or the Jaguars under 17.5 team total. Just kind of telling the story of, like you were talking about, him hitting some of those explosives, probably to Calvin Ridley, and then Jacksonville not being able to do much. Moving on to the next game, Carolina Panthers at Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles come in as 12.5-point favorites, and we've been talking the last couple weeks about how the Panthers have been more competitive, how Bryce Young has looked better. This will be by far the hardest test that he's faced this year with how the Eagles have been playing since they put Cooper DeJean in the slot. By basically any metric you look at, they've been the best defense in the NFL since week 6. So can Bryce Young keep it going? Can he keep this train rolling and keep showing improvement?
I mean, first off, we got to talk about Bryce Young. It is an unbelievable turnaround to watch. I think kind of one of my favorite storylines of the season. 13.5 points is a lot. And Young has obviously been better. I mean, his PFF grade the last 2 weeks has been I think best in the league. He certainly leads in big time throws. And looking at the, I often look at the raw grades and not kind of how they get normalized after. And there is some slight variation, but in the raw grades, I think he's actually number one. And he's a guy who's been balling. And I think when you look at what has changed, and a lot of this is like very difficult to quantify because it's just like, oh, he's playing better in the areas that he was previously struggling. And like, there's no necessarily rhyme or reason for that in the underlying data. But one thing that I have noticed from the data is that he's playing from a tight or closing pocket a lot more often than he ever has, which I think points to just like a general pocket awareness. And that's also correlated with pressure to sack rate, which is like really, really taken a massive, or I should say has improved pretty drastically. And like he never had games with like a tight pocket of 35% in his career, and each of the last bunch of games have been there, and he's been good from there, hitting throws. It's like the visual I have is, I think it was like week one where he's like jumping over his offensive lineman to try and complete a pass, and just like complete panic in the pocket. And now you've got that played out with Adam Thielen where he's just manipulating it, stepping up in the pocket, making a perfect throw, and all of that is to say he's dealt with pressure a lot better. And the Eagles have been, they've been great at generating pressure, but especially with the way Jalen Carter has played, they've also been one of the best in the NFL with disruption pressure, which oftentimes is going to come through the interior. It's why the Giants ranked very highly in that when Dexter Lawrence was playing so well. And he's done a great job dealing with that sort of pressure. And obviously the matchup matters and the market reflects that. There's a reason there's a 13.5 point total there. But the Carolina is a really difficult team to price. Like the way they've played the last couple of weeks, granted it hasn't been against the best of defenses, has been a far cry from where they've been the rest of the season. They've been playing kind of like a league average offense and not the 32nd best offense. And that's a very difficult thing to quantify and say, like, is this sustainable? How do we now talk about that with a matchup against the Eagles front? And the Eagles secondary, as you mentioned, who have just been a complete revelation kind of since they started playing their rookies. I think if I were betting this, I think 13.5 is just a lot of points, especially given the style of play that Philadelphia likes to run, but they should be able to run the ball. There's a reason Saquon Barkley's prop is 113 yards.
That's insane.
Which is insane. I can see myself building kind of like a Bryce Young having success, but the Panthers still losing, kind of like a Bryce Young 250 Carolina +7.5 type thing. Obviously pending the price, but that sort of idea of like Young still continuing to have success. And I'll just say this on the last part from like a pure betting perspective, the like attempts are really what's changed. Carolina is just like allowed Young to throw a lot more often. And then also when you have more offensive success, you're going to throw more attempts because you have ball longer and you're running more plays. And like Bryce Young getting 46 attempts in a game, granted it went into overtime, but still in the 40s before overtime and even in the 30s before that last drive, like that's a way more attempts than he's been getting. Like, he was a really, really low volume player. And that's, I don't think, quite reflected in the props. And that, I think, is especially sticky if you're going to sustain that level of offense. So all that is to say, I think there's some value still in his alt. Would it be shocking at all for the Eagles to shut them down? No. But I would almost rather bet on where I see Young's trajectory going, especially because like this could be a game script where they trail for most of the game and they're like, hey, we're going to allow Bryce Young to continue to throw, which was not true the first couple of weeks. But Eagles are a house also, especially running the ball. And like, what are the Panthers going to do? Are they going to like change how they're playing their coverages now? Are they going to go play single high and crowd the box? They haven't been doing that all year. They just allowed Bucky Irving and Rashad White to average like 7 yards a carry. I can't bet on the Panthers to win here, but I still think there's a way to kind of bet on Bryce Young's continued ascension.
Yeah, I have bet Bryce Young all the last 2 weeks. I don't think I will be this week. I'm getting scared off by the matchup, and I'm kind of worried that these last couple weeks we've seen the Chiefs, and we've talked about how much their pass defense has struggled, Tampa Bay, whose pass defense has struggled. The Eagles is a completely different story, and maybe there's value in kind of taking a chance on Young being able to compete against that. But I'm more interested in the Philadelphia side of the ball. I am not going to bet Saquon Barkley at 113 yards. This everything screams smash bot for Saquon Barkley, but I'm just not going to bet over 113 rushing yards. You can't make me. I'm not going to do it. So I think I'm more interested in the passing side of the ball, where the lines are pretty low. Obviously, they're kind of expecting the Eagles to continue this super run-heavy approach in a game where there's not going to be much resistance against the run. But Jalen Hurts' passing prop was it was like in the low 200s, under 210, I think, is what I saw it at. So he's had huge clean pressure splits. We've talked about that a couple of times. Panthers are dead last in pressure rate on the year. When he's clean, Hurts is averaging 9.6 yards per attempt, 115.3 passer rating. Both of those are top three in the NFL. You probably get Devontae Smith back this week from injury. It sounds like he's trending to play. And he's probably I'm someone I'm going to be looking at because he has kind of been leading them in slot snaps this year. And that's the weaker point of the Carolina secondary with Chal Smith-Wade in the slot. I would imagine J.C. Horn is going to travel with A.J. Brown. Not that that's a matchup that Brown can't win, but it is one of the Panthers' better cornerbacks who's going to be on him and not on Devontae Smith. So I kind of like building some stuff around Hurts and Smith. And then I think the way I want to attack the run game is to assume that the Eagles are going to have a big lead late and bet Kenneth Gainwell anytime touchdown. Am I crazy? Am I crazy for that?
No, I don't think so. I think he'd be really a little bit, maybe even Will Shipley, depending on how big they're winning. Yeah, I just look, you got to be prepared for, a Jalen Hurts touch.
But yeah, I know.
That's the only problem, but I like it. And I think your angle on Hurts and Smith is very intriguing. Like Smith can also burn you for a 70-yard touchdown, just as A.J. Brown can. And I think you can even get creative with kind of like under attempts over yards situation where you're basically betting on like and even if like especially if the Panthers do a little more to sell out to stop the run, I think you're going to get a lot of one-on-one matchups, and like Hurts can hit on a lot of deep shots, and he certainly loves to take those. I think that's a solid angle. I wish it were like there's no credit for being contrarian in betting in the same way it would be for like playing a daily fantasy contest. But I do think that's certainly a viable path. I can't argue with that.
Yeah. Last note on the Gainwell anytime touchdown, it's plus 900 carries in the red zone for the Eagles, up 10 plus in the second half. Barkley 8, Hurts 8, Gainwell 6. So we have seen them put Gainwell in and when they have these big leads in the second half and he gets the red zone work. So at 9-1, I'm in.
Not even he also will get an occasional first off, he got third downs in the red zone. He's probably 50-50 to see the field. And he's even gotten some he scored a touchdown on Sunday Night Football in the second quarter.
Yeah, or you get one of those Saquon like 70-yard runs to the five or something, and then he has to take a breather. And,
as long as it doesn't go to the wonders. Yeah. Yeah, that's very intriguing. Now, look, I'm not a huge anytime touchdown guy, but I see the path there.
Have to make up for Sincere McCormick not getting it done last week.
60 rush yards.
I know. He played well. He played well.
Yeah, he did.
Process was good. Saints at Giants is the next game we're going to. Saints are 4.5-point favorites on the road, 40.5-point total. And I think when I was looking at this game, I'm like, all right, I don't really know what I like from this game. And then I'm looking more at this game, and I'm like, I think this could be like a sneaky offensive shootout type of game with a 40.5-point total. So I'm interested what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I think it can be on one side of the ball. I mean, Ben, you got to be careful. The Giants might call you up, play offensive line this week.
Yeah.
They've got no one. They're both their tackles are week to week with injury, and that's like one of them is Evan Neal. Jermaine Eleanor, like he's out. He's been like a stabilizing force, I guess, for them since Andrew Thomas went down. Evan Neal, who's already been bad for 5 years, is also, I think, going to be out. They're calling guys off the practice squad. It's a disaster. It is truly, truly a disaster. The organization also completely dysfunctional right now. And then like the Giants defense has been We talked about it all year. They've been one of the, they've been by far the worst team when they don't generate pressure. It's certainly not of the disruption category. And then like the one guy who is accounting for basically all of that is now out for the season in Dexter Lawrence. And that obviously has second order effects because sure, Brian Burns, above average pass rusher, double team him now. You're not worried about any of the guys on the inside. And like the Saints have been a quality offense. Sure, losing Taysom Hill matters. And insofar as that, like, you know, diminishes their outlook in the red zone, like that stuff matters. But there's just a, there's a gulf, a gap, I think, between the Giants and any other team right now. They're so hurt. Their offensive line is so bad. And like you need a miracle from Drew Lock, who's not exactly the world's best quarterback. And like, can it happen? Sure. Are the Saints, is the Saints defense bad? Yes. Do I think they can take advantage of that? No. I think it's kind of similar to that Tampa Bay game where it's just like Tampa Bay pass defense has been a wreck all season. And like the Giants are gaining 30 yards of offense because they have no offensive line. They basically have Malik Nabers at wide receiver, and that's the entirety of the team. Really what this comes down to is I think that like the Giants are the worst team in the NFL right now by a pretty wide margin given the injuries, and like the Saints are not in the same tier. And with like real points and real games, I think they'll be able to score on this Giants team. Derek Carr is like, still, I think, our fourth rated quarterback. He's been having a good season. We've talked about Clint Kubiak all year. I'm definitely a big fan. And Marquez Valdez-Scantling is producing. I just see this as a spot for the Saints onslaughts and betting Giants unders. I do not see how they're going to have success in this game, even against a really bad Saints team.
Yeah, my theory is essentially the Saints defense is really bad. Drew Lock, despite last week, is not Tommy DeVito. And that's
true.
That is my theory. So on the Saints side, I agree with you. I think the Saints are going to be able to roll offensively. Giants are bottom five in yards allowed per run play. That was with Dexter Lawrence all season. Now you don't have Dexter Lawrence. That should get worse. The Saints have been good on the ground, and Alvin Kamara gets a lot of that work and probably gets even more of that work without Taysom Hill and the design runs that they give him. So I think it's a good volume game for Kamara and a good matchup. And then the deep shot stuff you talked about with Carr. He's our highest graded passer on deep attempts still this season. And the Giants have given up 20.6 yards per play on throws 20-plus yards downfield. That is dead last in the NFL. Marquez Valdez-Scantling is the clear guy he's going to be targeting primarily in those situations. So pretty easy one-to-one type bet on that sort of data-driven angle. But then on the Giants side, Locke has massive clean pressure splits. We just talked about it with Hurts. 80.7 grade clean, 28.5 pressure. Giants offensive line is bad, right? So maybe this is a situation where a bad Saints pass rush can get pressure in this matchup. They've been bottom
five. Can I just stop you here for a second?
Yeah.
Okay. The Giants tackles right now, Chris Hubbard, owner of a 25.5 pass block grade right now. Okay. Dead last in the NFL. Don't even Joshua Zedu, I think is his name. Yeah. I apologize if I mispronounce anything. This is a like third round pick from a couple of years ago who's barely seen the field, and his pass block grades are 46 and 42.4. The interior is like not any better. John Runyon's got like a 53, whatever. I don't need to list the grade. No one's above 60. It's just like weak links off, and then like the single worst tackles in the NFL. Like Chase Young is an NFL pass rusher. Is he great? No. Is he like average by our count? Yes. Carl Granderson has been one of the better pass rushers. Yes, they have not been able to generate pressure. I just think it's a completely different ball game. And I think it's just worth illustrating just how bad this offensive line is, or how bad it projects, I should say.
Yeah. No, it's a fair point. And Locke was pressured on 50% of his dropbacks last week against Dallas. Now, Dallas still has a very good pass rush, and they've been towards the top of the league since Micah Parsons came back. So maybe it's 40%, maybe it's 35%. And the Saints run a lot of man coverage. They've been the worst defense in the NFL in terms of yards allowed per play when they're in man coverage. They've had a bad run defense all year, been towards the bottom of the league in run defense. I'm just saying, I think the Saints put up points, but I think the Giants can at least string together some explosives, even if there's not consistency down to down. And I think 40.5 total for this game is too low. Again, on the man coverage angle specifically, Malik Nabers has a 38% target rate against man this year. So, like, he's been quiet since the beginning of the year, since he got hurt, basically. But this is a matchup where we could see Malik Nabers kind of have one of his ceiling games this year.
If the Giants can protect a little bit better than I anticipate, I absolutely think this is a viable path.
Well, we've got some disagreement. That's good. That's
finally.
need to throw some of that in there. The last two games, I'm not on the Bryce Young stuff, and I'm on the Giants offense. God help me. Chicago Bears at San Francisco 49ers is our next one. San Francisco's 3.5-point favorites coming off a clobbering in the snow on Sunday night against the Bills. Already talked about the Bears game against the Lions. Matt Eberflus fired. Do we get the new coach bump here for Chicago?
It's, you know, interesting that I'm on team generally, like, head coaching decisions and, like, management tends to not matter as much as people think. It's generally margin calls, and then, like, it matters in the sense that it does affect the wins and losses, but it's not, like, a necessarily predictive or sustainable thing. And it's, like, a lot of bias, like, oh, Kyle Shanahan, he lost. So we remember it more so, but it's still like a relatively small sample and probably actually just reflects the fact that his teams are good and plays in a lot of close games. But like Matt Eberflus has made basically the wrong end of game decision. I think that the whole thing was on Caleb Williams, whatever. That's a separate discussion for like four straight games. And they've been playing against like good teams down to the wire, and like some coaching has really, really cost them. So in that, I do think there might be some signal to Thomas Brown just doing whatever the opposite of what Eberflus was doing. But to actually get to kind of the matchup here, I think that we talked about this for weeks of just like Caleb Williams, and it's like so obvious when you are just watching and tracking how he plays. When he gets rid of the ball quick and he's decisive, he has been a good quarterback. When he like holds the ball on, when he holds the ball for a little bit longer than he should, he turns into one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL, and his sack rate is just egregiously high. I mean, we saw it all the time. He's making throws on third down, fitting balls into windows you don't think exist. Like DJ Moore had a drop on a 3rd and 15, I think it was in the second quarter, where like Williams is throwing absolute dime, and he's playing in rhythm. And just the difference of Williams playing in rhythm versus not is so stark. And I bring that up for multiple reasons. Number one, I think it points a case to his upside, and he's been a lot more in rhythm with Thomas Brown as offensive coordinator than when Shane Waldron was doing it. And number two, considering the state of the Niners defense, I don't think they're going to do as well a job of keeping Williams out of rhythm, of generating the quick pressure, of making Williams kind of have to be decisive. I don't think that the defense without Nick Bosa, they don't have a pass rush right now. They have not been able to stop the run also, which matters. I think the certainly on the offensive side of the ball, Chicago can keep churning along. I think there is some real signal to Williams not throwing the ball from the like average time to throw range of 3 to 3.5, and that's been between 2.5 and 3 over the last bunch of games. I think that is sustainable for success, and there's nothing really the Niners are going to be able to do, especially without Bosa, to kind of take him out of that. I'm on that side of the ball. The Chicago defense has been bad the last bunch of months. I'm not sure about Purdy's health, but the Niners are still relatively healthy. Yes, Trent Williams is out. The offensive line has not been the problem. I think like losing McCaffrey hurts, losing Mason hurts. Isaac Rendo, I think, is going to be fine as the running back. We'll probably see some slight drop off, but I think it really kind of rests on like, is Brock Purdy healthy right now? And that's not a question I'm certainly not capable of answering. But I do think it's kind of integral to seeing like, are the Niners going to be able to keep up with the Bears, even like way outpace them, because this is still a really good offense. But I do think that Williams is going to have success. So I'm definitely going to stay kind of on that side of the ball and making bets and perhaps building some tail stuff too, just on like if Purdy's not healthy or this Niners offense continues its struggles to put up points. So I think a lot of that is fluky. Like even with Brandon Allen, they were moving the ball fine. They just turned it over like four times.
Yeah, the red zone on both sides of the ball really has been an issue. They've struggled to keep teams out of the end zone. They've struggled to find the end zone on offense. And I know the broadcasts have talked about that the last couple of weeks, but it remains an issue. And the injury to Bosa is significant in this matchup because Caleb Williams takes so many sacks. Right, that's one of the biggest issues with this Bears offense. And now you're looking at a team where currently, if Bosa's out, Malik Collins has their highest pass rush win rate at 12%, 55th in the NFL among all players. I think the Bears are going to be able to run on San Francisco too. Like, I've typically been avoiding DeAndre Swift rushing props, but I'm expecting it's going to be in the mid to high 40s, and that's something that San Francisco has struggled to stop all year, has been stopping the run. And then on the San Francisco side of the ball, I have less confidence in their offense than Chicago's just because of some of the injuries, but I do think there's components that you can play as player props. Isaac Grindo, I haven't seen his line yet, hasn't come out yet, but I think there's a chance that, which is crazy to say, but with McCaffrey, from what he looked like after the injury, and with Jordan Mason, Grindo's probably the most explosive of those three. He's like a 4-3 guy coming out of Louisville. He has big playability. 51% of his rushing yards this season have come on explosive runs. And Chicago's allowed the sixth highest explosive run rate in the NFL. So I think there are some angles you can play around Grindo hitting big runs, and then Kittle in the receiving game. Talked about the Bears' struggles against inline tight ends last week against Detroit. Didn't really pan out in terms of yards, but they've given up the fifth most yards to inline tight ends this season. They play more cover three than just about any other team in the NFL. There's only a handful above them in cover three rate. George Kittle's up over 3 yards per route run against cover three this year. I think if you're looking to go in the San Francisco passing game, that's probably where you want to go, but I do like the Bears plus 3.5 in this spot.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I don't think I should say I'm with you on the angles. I don't know if I'm going to bet the 3.5 because I think there's a lot of uncertainty on the Niners side, but all of those, certainly the player side, I think is intriguing.
Moving on to another good game in the late window, Bills at Rams. Bills are 4.5-point favorites on the road. They've been playing just about as well as any team in the NFL right now, and we've talked a couple weeks ago about how good the Rams offense has been when they've been healthy. Hasn't looked super pretty necessarily the last couple weeks, but I still think that upside is there for their offense. And I'll just kick off with kind of Rams offense thoughts against Buffalo. And we saw the Bills are going to play in light boxes. Right? They're going to take away explosive. That's what they've done under Sean McDermott. We saw that last week against San Francisco, who was having a lot of success on the ground early in the snow. Bills eventually adjusted. But I think this is a game where Kyren Williams could be more efficient than we've seen from him the last couple weeks. The Bills' defense plays light boxes on early downs at a top 10 rate. They're allowing 6 yards per carry on those plays. The Rams actually run at a top 10 rate when they face light boxes on early downs, and Williams has 4.9 yards per carry in those situations. So I think this is a case where we could see Williams have some success, and then maybe Kupp attacking the slot against Buffalo. But interested what you think in this spot.
Yeah, I also think the Rams are going to be able to run the ball. And what I like about the Rams in general is like they can beat you in many different ways, right? They're not like certain teams who you kind of need a certain situation. Like if Stafford's forced to play in obvious passing downs, like he's going to be fine, at least relative to league average. They can run the ball. I think what and obviously in kind of the ordinary friendly offensive settings, when you're throwing on second and three and you're projected to do a lot of that, they can have success. I think what's most interesting is like, what do we make of Blake Corum? I think Blake Corum probably is the more talented back than Kyren Williams right now. He's certainly more explosive. Like Kyren Williams is one of the he's like a very solid on the success rate style, but like does not break big runs. And then they obviously started last week's game just giving it to Corum, and then Williams kind of took over. I'm not sure what to make of that. And perhaps there is some digging to do in press conferences. Actually, Sean McVay tends to be one of the more reliable coaches if he ever gives you information about who he's going to use. Which, by the way, I want to say, the Lions alluded to Penei Sewell throwing a pass in their press conferences leading up to the Thursday game. I'd actually messaged someone like who had said like what are the Lions like what thing are they gonna pull out, and I was like Penei Sewell pass, and that was just from listening to this, some of the press conferences. Either way, yeah, I think you're right that Buffalo is going to try and bait the Rams into running. I think that's probably a sound strategy. I would love if we get kind of some Corum props and maybe some indication that the usage of last week is stickier than the usage of the previous 12. But I'm with you. And I think kind of generally speaking, including home field advantage, 6 points is a lot between these two teams. Yes, Buffalo's a house. Would it shock me at all if Buffalo scores 35 points? No. Do I think the Rams defense is pretty underrated? Also, yes. Does that matter as much against Josh Allen? Probably not. But when I think about this from a general perspective, 6 points, too many points, especially with kind of how consistent the Rams offense has been. And they've had, maybe consistent is not the right word. They've had some, like, they had a terrible half against Miami. But, like, they can turn it on. They're especially good in the red zone, and I'm willing to believe that they, rather than some other teams, it's less fluky. They've been really good in the red zone every year, McVay. And it's, like, it is so interesting. They do it so seamlessly. Whereas, like, teams like the Seahawks, I was just looking at last week, just, like, it's a real, real struggle in the red zone. And then, like, the Rams just have, like, a creative design for Nacua in space, and he just scores easily. They run this, like, out route to DeMarcus Robinson. They've done it, like, five times this year. It works every time. All that is to say, I think this is, a still solid Rams offense. There's a wide range of outcomes to this game, just because I think the Bills offense is, like, going to have some success. It's a question of how much can the Rams keep up with it, and then, like, are the Bills going to convert their drives into touchdowns, and, like, can the Rams sustain their level of red zone success? And, like, that's ultimately what I think is going to determine the outcome of this game, is how many of those drives end in 3 versus 7. And then kind of breaking it down, I think you're right that the Rams rushing attack is a particularly appealing angle given the way the Bills play defense.
Yeah, and I think the way, if you're trying to tell a story of the game, the way you kind of lean into the Rams run game, it has to be volume, because, like you said, Williams isn't explosive. Corum is probably more explosive than Williams, but it's not like he's Isaac Grindo. Like, he's not that type of player, right? So I think the story is, like, I don't think the Rams are going to be able to stop the Bills consistently. So you're going to need turnovers. You're going to need big plays. And they do at least have a young, talented defensive front that has been able to generate pressure all year. And Buffalo has been good against pressure. They're second in yards per dropback against pressure this year. But, like, Josh Allen, he's playing like one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, but you can still get some pseudo Will Levis moments out of Josh Allen. So I think that's, if you're playing the Rams run game angle, it's going to have to be by the defense being able to generate some turnovers and the Rams being able to play from ahead, and you just get a lot of volume to Williams and or Cora.
And it's just a natural argument to make. Like, the Bills go for it a lot on fourth down. Like, these are extremely high leverage plays. The Bills are more likely to get it than not, but, like, they can fail two of those in a game, or just, like, turnovers are going to happen. And that matters, right? You can make that argument effectively for any game that the Bills play in. But the point is that matters a little bit more when the margin's thinner, where, like, the Rams can take advantage of that because they have a good offense and they should be able to sustain drives. But yeah, I'm with you. And then you can just, like, think through the second order questions of, like, what happens if the Rams have sustained success on the ground. It's probably going to mean low play volume. You're probably looking at an unders type game. You're maybe looking at some field goals, some turnovers. These are all things you can include in building SGPs. Totally with you. That's kind of the pathway for the Rams. And then the Bills can score 35, 40 points on anyone. And those paths are certainly viable, especially with how low Josh Allen's props are sitting. They tend to to have success when they win. When Josh Allen, excuse me, let me rephrase. When Josh Allen has a lot of attempts, that is correlated with the Bills winning. Whereas when Lamar Jackson has a lot of attempts, that's correlated with the Ravens losing. And that information is certainly valuable in thinking through same game parlays and how this game can play out.
Yeah, the first thing that jumped to mind was Rams rushing, but that other Bills kind of roll on offense angle is certainly viable, and that could definitely happen too. And I think two data nuggets that trend more towards that side, if they help with player props, the Bills have allowed 91 targets to running backs this year. That's 12 more than any other defense. Rams typically not a team that works in Kyren in the passing game a ton, but this could be a spot where you see a little bit more at what should be really low lines. And then Khalil Shakir, the Rams play cover three or cover six on about 50% of their snaps. Those are two primary coverages. And against those two coverages, Shakir is 34% target rate, up over 3 yards per route run. He's been clearly their top target. Another player you could look for an over in a player prop.
Love it.
We'll close it out with Sunday Night Football, Chargers at Chiefs. Kansas City is 3.5-point favorites, 42.5-point total. These two teams played early in the season. That was the game that Rashee Rice got hurt. It was kind of ugly, but the Chiefs pulled it out. And that's basically been every Chiefs game this year. It's kind of ugly, but the Chiefs pulled it out.
It's going to say story of their season.
Yeah, including Friday against the Raiders, where Aiden O'Connell got the snap when he wasn't ready for it, and that was the end of the game. So I'm interested what you think here, because just first thought is we've been attacking the Chiefs pass defense the last couple weeks. I'm still willing to do that, and Herbert's line has gone down a little bit after a not great game against the Falcons, which is kind of unexpected. And I think some priors being built in for Kansas City. It's around 225, in the mid 220s somewhere. So I think there's potential here for something around the Chargers win and Herbert.
Yep, I'm there. I think the Chiefs pass defense has allowed, since Jalen Watson went down, talking about this ad nauseum, I think it's week 8, maybe week 7, every passer since then has been getting like EPA per pass of at least 0.1, which is like 65th to 70th percentile. I mean, Aiden O'Connell was tearing apart. These also like were not great offenses. Got Gardner Minshew round one, Aiden O'Connell, Baker Mayfield with no receivers, Bryce Young. It's just a whole cast of mediocre. I mean, Josh Allen obviously tore him apart. And I think the Chargers are one of the better ones. What worries me a bit in this matchup is Chris Jones. The Chiefs have done a good job of generating interior pressure, which is also the weakness of the Chargers offensive line. They've been very good in the tackle spots with Slater and Alt, who grayed out as some of our best pass blockers. But if the Chiefs, I think, on defense are going to slow down the Chargers, it's going to be, I think, through the interior and through Chris Jones. But Ladd McConkey, if you ask me this on Wednesday morning or Tuesday, it seemed, given what some beat reporters were reporting, he was going to miss this game almost definitely. He practiced yesterday, so I think that he's going to be in. And the Chiefs play a ton of man coverage. I don't think McDuffie's going to follow McConkey into the slot all that much. And McConkey also just has a crazy high target share versus man. I think it was like 38%. Maybe I'm slightly off there, but and like we even saw it last week of a guy who effectively has all the targets, and he should be able to win that one-on-one battle. But ultimately, what I think this comes down to is a Chiefs team that's very overrated right now, and like they, if you kind of take a look at how they've been playing from a fundamentals perspective, it's really just league average, and that's even discounting how they've performed in the red zone, which has obviously been pretty poor. Defense has been bad, certainly on the pass defense side, and I don't think the Chargers, especially without J.K. Dobbins, are going to like go back to their early season ways of running the ball. I think they're just going to let Herbert rip it a bunch, and I think he can have success against this man defense that's been bleeding production to everyone, and especially with McConkey in, and Joshua Palmer to some extent also has been a lot better against man. That's another kind of, if you're going off McConkey, That's another receiver to build with. But 3.5, too many points right now. And the Chargers defense has been pretty solid. This is not the Chiefs offense of 2018. It's just not. And I think it is worthwhile to still throw a dart on Xavier Worthy. He's getting like a 60-yard deep shot every game. It's going to connect one of these times, just by virtue of who's playing quarterback. And even like if you get the opportunity, which is much more valuable in predicting future production, like it's going to hit at some point. So all that is, I like the Chargers side of this game. I think Chargers SGPs with Herbert, McConkey, and or Palmer are intriguing. I think Worthy is a good bring back. But ultimately, my favorite build here is just building through the Chargers. They're going to pass the ball. Chiefs have been a good run defense. The Chargers don't have much going on the rushing side. And I think Herbert is good enough to win in a situation where he's forced to throw on most dropbacks. And especially if they can take care of Chris Jones, which I think is kind of the biggest drawback, I think the Chargers are going to have success in this one.
Yeah, I'm on the same general type of angle on this game. I think when you look at the Chargers receiving core, obviously the McConkey news is big, whether he's in or out. I still like Herbert if he's out. Like maybe I shouldn't, but I still do. I just kind of believe in Herbert at this point. But the Chiefs play a lot of man. They also play a lot of too high. And I was debate 2 weeks ago when they played the Ravens, I was debating whether to put Palmer or Johnston into my SGP. I ended up putting Palmer, which was disappointing because he had like 250 air yards and 33 receiving yards. But I looked after the game, and Johnston had the biggest target difference, single high versus too high, of any wide receiver in the NFL this year. Against too high, he doesn't get targeted. So the Chiefs well play some single high, but they also play a lot of too high. So you probably see depressed targets from him. I kind of like Will Dissly. He's been a real part of this offense, and the Chiefs have struggled against tight ends. Disley's been good against too high. So I like throwing him in there as well. And then on the other side of the ball, like with the Chargers defense, I'm kind of at a point where when they play an elite offense, I'm going to fade them. But otherwise, I respect this defense and what they've done this year. And the Chiefs do not have an elite offense. We haven't seen that at any point this year. So I'm with you. I like Chargers. I like Herbert pass game stuff. And I think it would be fitting if the Chargers win a one-score game against the Kansas City Chiefs. And the chargering...
All these years.
The chargering of years past is gone with Herbert. The Chiefs have been dominant in one-score games. They can't lose. I think the story is setting up for Harbaugh to pull out a close one against Kansas City.
I was going to say, and I'm glad you mentioned Harbaugh. I could just see the Monday headline of like Jim Harbaugh getting all the credit for this win. This story is writing itself. But I think you're like really right to point out that the Chiefs offense has not been elite. That doesn't mean that like it can't be, and like we should obviously have an extremely strong prior of like projecting the future games for the Chiefs. But in this 1 week sample where we sit in week 14, I'm with you, this is not an elite offense. And I agree with you with that, like for a Chargers defense, if they're going up against the Bills, I think that's like a completely different story than a league average defense. And I am with you that I would respect the Chargers defense a lot more in those spots. And I don't know. I think there's some value on 3.5. And we're going to live and die by Justin Herbert ripping. It's going to be great. Things are going to look great until someone at Quentin Johnson has a huge drop in a big scenario. And then somehow... I feel like I've seen this Chiefs-Chargers game a million times where Travis Kelce's going to end up with a 40-yard touchdown on some broken tackles for the Chiefs to win it. But all jokes aside, it would be I think a great story for the Chargers to come out here and not betting on the story. I'm not like foreseeing that and being like, ooh, maybe I should place some bets. I think that the data supports the Chargers side, and this would kind of just be a nice anecdote to go along with it.
Living and dying by Justin Herbert ripping it feels better than living and dying by Drew Lock ripping it. So I'm going to be living and dying by both. But all right, that's all we got this week. Any closing thoughts from you on anywhere else you really like quickly?
I think the Tampa passing game's in a great spot. The Vegas team has been one of the biggest pass funnels, and I'm pretty surprised that where Irving and White's rushing props have opened. Teams have really not been able to run the ball against the Raiders. I think we can see Baker, and then especially I'll believe in this narrative with Evans, not because there's a narrative there, because he's clearly the alpha number one receiver. I think there's kind of a path there. And then the only other spot I touch on is the over in general offense in Cleveland, Pittsburgh. We saw this matchup 2 weeks ago. Jameis Winston is just such a overs quarterback. He's going to throw a ton. Cleveland has not had much success on the ground. Winston's going to push it downfield. He's going to be more likely to turn the ball over. I'm waiting to fade the Steelers offense. This is not the spot. The Cleveland pass rush has taken such a big hit since Za'Darius Smith went down. Since Za'Darius Smith was traded, excuse me. The pass rush numbers for the season look great. If you break it down by after he's been traded, they don't look so great. And they're so vulnerable to explosive plays, which that's how the Steelers are living and dying. With the Russell Wilson explosive plays. I think we can see points in that one too.
Yeah, I'm with you. I didn't bring it up because we just talked through that matchup 2 weeks ago, but I'm on the same exact stuff I was on 2 weeks ago in terms of the Steelers pass game. And you look at that pass game, Wilson hit 4 deep throws. One of them went to Pickens, which is kind of unique for how their offense has been this year. I think there's opportunity for Pickens to have a big game. And don't get into sack props a ton, but in this game, Alex Highsmith, Nate Herbig, sack props, good bets. The Chiefs or the Browns pay a ton of attention to TJ Watt on the other side. The Browns are down to Jermaine Ifedi at left tackle. Jedrick Wills might be trying to play, but Jedrick Wills has also been playing poorly this year when he's been out there. So you're going to get a lot of one-on-one matchups against really good pass rushers with a bad left tackle, and I think there's going to be some value there.
Love it.
That's what we'll close out with, though. Real quick, what do we got?
Oh, I was just going to say, I actually bet my first sack prop in years last week, and it was Nick Herbig. Came there through very end. Teams are paying so much attention to TJ Watt. But, yeah, I'm glad we're back on the sack prop train.
Yeah, I think I bet two. I bet Herbig in the first game against the Browns, and it hit. And then I bet Frankie Louvu on a Monday night or one of the night games, and he had 2 sacks in the first half. So they've been treating me well. I'm like,
Ken Lindsay, sack prop whisperer.
All right, that's all we got for this week. Thank you for listening. For Judah Fork Gang, this is Ben Lindsay, and we'll be back with you next week to break down week 15. Just cruising along.